I'm not superstitious, but I am a little stitious.
Tuesday, August 21st, 2018. This is The Better Life on a Tuesday. How about that, huh? The Tuesday podcast finally dropping on a Tuesday. No podcast last week. Do apologize about that. But the guests that I had, or the interviews that I was going to record last week, weren't really in stone. We just couldn't make it happen. So by Thursday evening, I realized, oh man, I just don't have a show here. Decided to not force anything on Thursday evening or Friday, because I mean, by then, what, 3 days later, I have to try to flip another episode. So no episode. Thank you for your patience. That bite at the top of the show, for most of you that probably recognize, it's from The Office. Good old Michael Scott with a classic line. Not superstitious, but I'm a little stitious. And while it's not specific to gambling, and he doesn't say it in a gambling context, it's definitely something that I think recreational gamblers can attest to. And I'll share a quick story that that made me think of that, right? I was playing craps at Horseshoe Baltimore. Some of you may have seen my tweet on this. I was playing craps at Horseshoe Baltimore the other night. And it was my last shooter of the night, and I had some direct bet out there, right? So I had direct bet coupons, and Eric Rosenthal, if you're listening, I didn't deliberately, well, I shouldn't say, I guess I did, but Eric, I only chose the direct bet over the war credits because I've never used direct bet yet, and I wanted to have that experience, wanted to know what that was like, so I knew. So I got some direct bet from Horseshoe Baltimore. I decided to use it at the craps table because at the craps table they were going to let me. They were letting people use their direct bet on the pass line or the don't pass, and then you can use your own money for odds. And so my thinking was, well, all right, well, I'm sort of free rolling my opportunity to get the no house edge bet out there, right? So I'm using the direct bet coupons to make the pass line bet, and then backing it up with odds using my own money. Well, the direct bet coupons, and one of the reasons why I chose it is it ended up being $150 in direct bet when I thought I was only going to get $90. So they gave me $150, and then I had never used direct bet yet, so I was like, all right, let me do that. So when it printed out the coupons, it came out in like $10, $10, $10, $25, or so it was like five $10 coupons, two $25 coupons, and then a $50 coupon. So I went to the blackjack table and just naturally I started with the $10 coupons, right? So 10, 10, 10, 10. And those were like back and forth, like one would win, one would not, blah, blah, blah. Then I hit the $25 coupons and, the shooter hit a 12 on both $25 coupons. I was on the pass line. And so boom, there you go. $25 coupon, 12, gone. Hit, threw one down, right back with the 12, gone. So now I got the $50 coupon. It's going to be my last shooter of the night, last roll of the night. And after a day of decent gambling with my Atlantic City trip, and the guy, so, and I remember thinking, oh, I should place the eight as well. And then I was thinking, don't overexpose for the sake of game. Like I was like, that's kind of overexposing, right? For no reason. Cause I had the $50, coupon out there that the table that I was at, it was max two times odds. So I backed it up with full odds and we need a six at this point. And so the guy rolls eight after eight after eight after eight after eight after eight. I swear, like in ten rolls, at least seven of them had been eight. And of course, by like the fourth one, I'm thinking, oh, it would have been nice to have that eight out there. But then I'm like, well, I mean, of course, if I throw it out there now, he won't hit one again, right? So there goes that little. I'm a little stitious, right? But the little stitious came in this moment. A guy comes up next to me to my right. We're opposite the shooter, and he comes up and he wants to buy in right away. already I'm like, as a craps player, I'm just annoyed, right? I'm just like, God, just, I almost feel like it should be a rule that you can't, that you can only buy in when the puck is off. But he comes up, he throws money on the table, and it is taking a while to figure out what he wants. And he's only buying, like, he's, and he wants the minimum across. And there's something, as still, I try not to, like, everybody plays their own game, but it's not like he was bothering us for, like, the, he just wanted this, he wanted minimum of across, and it was taking forever to get that communicated. Finally, they figure it out, boom, got everything across, and in my head, I go, I know exactly what's about to happen. It was, I'm not superstitious. I don't believe that he ruined the flow of the dice. I don't believe that the dice know anything, right? But I was sitting there, I was just like, I know exactly what's about to happen. And sure enough, four tray, and we were done. And I just walked away pissed, of course. And I, in my head, in that sequence, I don't remember, but I remember thinking, I'm not superstitious, but I remember like hearing Michael Scott in my head, so that's why I decided to throw that at the top of the show, and make that sort of a gambling-esque reference in pop culture, because that is a line that comes to mind when I gamble. So yeah, that was at the end of a day where I went up to Atlantic City to take advantage of some tier matching and some free play. And then on my way back, I stopped at Harris, Philadelphia, and then Harris, Baltimore, and came home. I'm going to record a short trip report on that, what happened in that day, what I saw, what I learned, stuff like that. That'll be available on Patreon, patreon.com/thebetterlife. All patrons will have access to that. But yeah, that's, I wanted to share the crap story here on this week's episode, so that way I could use that bite at the top. Oh, by the way, I should say, one thing I want to say, I brought this up with a couple of people. The other gambling that I've done recently is I went to MGM National Harbor to play some video poker in hopes of, maybe getting enough points to get the prize, the gift for the day. The gift for the day was, what was it? It was some luggage, some hard case luggage, right? And so I went there in hopes of, right? I never want to, like, commit, because you could end up losing, like, $500 to win, like, $35 luggage, right? So I went there with, like, how much I was willing to lose. Of course, I've already budgeted myself, and I went there, like, hoping to get enough for that. I sat down at a table, a game that I'd never played before. It was, forgive me if I'm botching the name here, but it was super triple play or something like that. Super triple times play or something like that. Essentially, it was a triple play game, and then the max bet was 6 credits per row. And essentially what that 6 credit gave you was a bonus on a 4-of-a-kind. So instead of a 4-of-a-kind paying $125, the 4-of-a-kind was going to pay $500. And so I did that. And within my first 25, 30 hands, I hit 2 4-of-a-kinds. And so that was an extra grand that just popped up. And I was like, well, screw luggage. Deuces, I'm out. I didn't get any luggage with it, right? Because I didn't need luggage. So it's cash in hand. So that was a nice little payday. So the moral of that story being, two things. If you go play a promotion, you hope to get the promotion, right? It's silly to force it. I know, and it's sunk cost bias that tells us, well, you've made it this far, right? Like, oh, you probably only need to play another 100, right? Another 100 coin in to get it, right? Or something like that. Or oh, you only need like a half hour longer at the table. Sunk cost bias will tell you that, hey, just play a little bit longer and you'll finally get this prize. But, you know, when you get into that mindset, you start becoming a slave to those things, and you don't want that. You want to play the way you like to play. Make sure you still set a budget. Maybe increase your budget a little bit for the sake of the promotion. Whatever, it's on you. But make sure you still set that budget. And the other side, if you end up having a bomb session, right? You end up, you know, getting a hot roll at the craps table, you know, you hit a royal or something like that, you know, don't, you know, it's easy to be like, well, now I have so much to play with, I'm gonna, you know, but, you know, variance could definitely go, you know, go south still, and now you're out your jackpot, and maybe you still haven't played enough to get the promotion prize, and then now, you know, now you're gonna go home super pissed. So you win big, or you set a budget, and if you get the prize, awesome. If you hit a big jackpot, maybe cash out. I'm not saying like stop gambling, right? I'm not saying that, but you know, maybe you cash out and take, you know, 20-25% of that jackpot and put it into your budget for the day, and take the rest of it and pocket it, and make sure that you're leaving with a profit, leaving with like the bulk of that. And you know, of course, you probably still want to get some play in, but the point being, don't spoil your bankroll pursuing, you know, a six pack of Coke or something from the casino. So that in the quick AC trip is the only gambling I've really done in the past couple of weeks, but all done to sort of pad the bankroll going into VV7. Super excited about that. This week's episode is going to feature the Wizard of Odds, someone that many of us are familiar with, wizardofodds.com. It is a wonderful website. It's a website that often gets referred to on a lot of gambling podcasts, because the odds and the strategies and the gaming information is phenomenal, and there is just there's something to be said about a website that has been around as long as his has, that has remained the standard in what it's being used for. And with so many people popping up blogs and websites in all different industries, right? Like look at sports, right? Like ESPN, of course, is a big one. But when it comes to like what other, you know, what there was like what I don't want to go through all of them, but the point being, now we're in this wave of like Barstool and stuff like that, and not that those are like the standard, but the point being, most industries have so much turnover, so much like so many people trying to come in and be the new and the hot and the The Wizard of Odds, when it comes to gambling, has been the standard on information and such, and it's been a trusted site for as long as I've been trying to learn to be a better gambler. And so I highly recommend that you check that out for any game that you're trying to play. It's like the first place I go when I'm like, hey, I want to try Let It Ride, right? Or what's Let It Ride about? The first place I go is wizardofodds.com and read up about it there. Michael's going to talk to us about his childhood days, where he was, getting the best of his friends in betting situations that he saw an advantage in, how he got into casino games, his favorite game to play now, what he likes introducing his friends to, stuff like that. I know you're going to love this. It was super exciting to finally get him on the show, because he was one of the first people that came to mind when I started this podcast. So Michael Shackelford from thewizardofodds.com. Enjoy. With me today, I have Michael Shackelford, Ford like the car, I learned. Sir, thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.
Michael, I think, Michael or Mike, what do you prefer?
Mike.
Mike's fine, yeah, okay. Mike, I think, I first wanted to say, it's a pleasure to talk to you, because when I first started getting into seriously understanding gambling, right, which unfortunately came way too far after I started gambling, but when I started getting serious about understanding it, your website was one of the first to come up, and one that I have been referring to multiple times. It's a website that so many of my friends have asked me, hey, have you heard of this website? It's one that gets referred to often in this podcast community that we're in, when we're talking about odds and strategies. So I want to congratulate you not only on just such a successful endeavor and website and how informational it is, but really of being the standard for gambling strategies and odds and information as what can be found on the internet.
Well, thanks for those kind words. I appreciate it, and I'm proud of the site, and that it's become as trusted as it is.
let's start where we start all of these interviews, and going to that moment that you were exposed to gambling. So maybe not the first time you were gambling per se, but if there was a moment before that that you can remember, maybe it was someone playing, maybe you saw it on TV, maybe you, I don't know, wherever you were, tell us about that first exposure to gambling.
I don't even remember, because I have been gambling as long as I have had a concept of what money is. And as a kid, I would challenge people to bets on anything where I perceived an advantage. For example, we had a basketball hoop in our driveway, and I knew even the hottest sports enthusiasts in the neighborhood could not shoot 50%. Because it was really high up and we were dealing with kids. And so I would challenge them, even money, you can't make a free throw. And they accepted this bet right and left. And I must have made so much money on that. And anything else, I mean, I just had a natural sense of what the odds were of anything happening. And yeah, I just love betting on oddball stuff. And then, but as I got older, I loved to deal blackjack among my friends, because it's the easiest way to make money gambling is to be the casino. So, and especially when you're dealing with a bunch of teenagers, they have no concept of proper blackjack strategy. And I would see them doing stuff like doubling on 14, and it was just easy money. So, it just comes naturally to me. So, don't even remember where it started.
Interesting. So what you're telling, doubling on 14, not a positive EV play then?
Oh, it's a terrible play. Yeah, but if you're getting the good side of it, if you're the dealer, then by all means, give him a drink and let him do it.
Were you stepping into a casino as soon as you were of age? Like, when did you start frequenting the venues that were offering these things?
Oh, yeah, I was so excited to go to Vegas as soon as I turned 21. So this would have been in 1986. So and in preparation, I went with a friend, and we had planned to do a little bit of gambling, but I really hadn't studied up on casino gambling that much before this trip. But when I got there, I walked over to a bookstore, because I wanted to learn how to play blackjack before I got there, but I guess whatever bookstore was in Santa Barbara didn't have any books on blackjack, but I found plenty of them at a bookstore in Las Vegas. And so being the cheap bastard that I am, I copied down the basic strategy from a book, and so went out of the store with just the sheet of paper that I scribbled the basic strategy on. And then I played for hours with it at a dollar a hand at the old Silver City. And I just had the greatest time. I mean, I must have played dollar basic strategy for 8 hours all night long. And I actually came up ahead. And I just had the greatest time. And that was the first of many, many trips to Vegas and Laughlin.
And what sort of comps came with betting $1 a hand for 8 hours?
Oh, just the free drinks, and I was happy to get them.
Yeah,
and I never tipped a dime. I didn't know I was supposed to, the dealers didn't seem to be too thrilled with me. You know, here's this guy slowing down the table, looking at this old sheet of paper with the basic strategy written on it, looking up every play, never tipping, betting only a buck. But yeah, I remember that night so clearly.
I think that's one of the things that I don't think most recreational players know, is that they can use the basic strategy cards at the table.
Absolutely. And I used it on practically every hand, you know, unless it was really obvious. And I have seen dealers at PyGow say that you can't sit there and slow down the game looking up a strategy every single hand, and the PyGow strategy is really complicated. But I've seen people at the tables using basic strategy cards all the time, and I've never once seen them be asked to put them away.
So was blackjack your first love then when it came to casino games?
Yeah, absolutely. All I played for the first several trips was blackjack. And Then I moved to Atlantic City, and I saw this game, Spanish 21. And at first I thought it was a gimmick, but then I analyzed it myself, and I realized that given the rules in Atlantic City, the odds were actually better than blackjack. So, and at this time I had moved to Baltimore, so then I switched to being a Spanish 21 player. And then when I finally moved to Vegas, I got really into video poker. Yeah, but blackjack was definitely the first game that I really delved into deeply.
What was it about video poker that initially drew you in? Because I'm curious, because I am on a video poker binge right now myself. I'm curious what got you into it.
Yeah, so I moved here to Vegas in February of 2001 and had already had the site going. So a lot of people reached out to me, a lot of professional gamblers that wanted to meet me. And about 50% of them were primarily video poker players. So I couldn't help but be introduced to it. And back in 2001, video poker was still a very strong play compared to how it is now. Now, back then, people were lamenting, oh, it was so much better in the 90s. But nevertheless, it was still quite a strong play, something that you could pretty easily make a good living on with a decent bankroll. And so, yeah, so I got definitely switched my emphasis to video poker and also tournaments.
It's funny that you said that, you know, video poker players, you know, thought that it was better in the 90s. I just spoke with Richard Munchkin not too long ago, and he was talking about how every year he hears that blackjack's dead, and every year people keep playing it.
Yeah, and video poker is much the same way as a lot of players have signed the death certificate. Nevertheless, it's still good. You know, it's certainly not as easy as it used to be, but yeah, there's definitely advantage plays out there in both blackjack and video poker.
So do you talked about when you were growing up, you're making these dollar bets with your friends because you had advantage on the free throws and you're dealing blackjack, and then you go to Vegas and you play blackjack, but you're playing basic strategy and you're learning these other games. Do you consider yourself an advantage player?
Not anymore. Certainly when I moved to Vegas, I made about one third of my income from advantage play. But as my name got circulated around Vegas as a unprofitable player, shall we say, to the casinos, and that I quit getting invited to tournaments and video poker pay tables dried up, that I then switched my emphasis to sports betting, but I never got really deeply into that. I mainly only did it in football season. But, you know, I no longer perceive there to be really good bets in football either. So, sad to say, I'm not really a very active gambler anymore.
Oh, I noticed that you're into hiking. I noticed that you've summited a couple things recently.
Oh yeah, absolutely. This last summer I summited Mount Baker in Washington, the northernmost of the Cascades and the highest points in Colorado and New Mexico.
Yeah, Mount Baker's that's over in my neck of the woods. I grew up in Washington State.
Yeah, right there by Bellingham.
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned like the unprofitable player part is, I think, sports bettors are really starting to face that now. Is, you know, William Hill is starting to get a bad reputation for pushing back anybody who not only is a perceived winner, but is perceived to be most interested in winning. When that story just came out today about how William Hill will even start pushing back players that are starting to become sharp and aren't actually already sharp. You mentioned pay tables are starting to dry up. One thing that we're seeing a lot now is, like, some casinos are trying to boast a full pay bank of video poker machines, but the multiplier from the slot club won't be applied to it, or it will take a lot. It takes a lot more to gain points and stuff like that. You know, do you think the average player can find a game that their slot club can compensate for, or do you think that it's really only for the true APs that know what they're looking for anymore?
Yeah, to address your first comment about William Hill, is one of my favorite plays used to be half-point parlay cards, and I would consistently only bet those picks where either it was a stale line or I was getting that critical half-point off of three. And there were only a few places that had the juicy pay tables, and one of them was William Hill. So I was primarily betting those every single week, unless it was just a really bad week. And for a while, William Hill was really liberal about taking these cards. But then, I would say gradually over about 3 years, they started to wise up. And it used to be that I could go into any William Hill book with a huge stack of these things all round robin, and they would accept every single one. But then it's got to the point now where if you present a big stack, the first one, it'll go through, and the writer will just sit there and he'll say that he's waiting for approval, and then it'll come up, and then you put in another one that's practically the same, and then maybe that'll get approved after twice as long of a delay, and then you put in a third one and it'll come back rejected. Yeah, that's just how they are now. They are on to what are the hot sides with these 3-point parlay cards. So that's yet another thing that I quit doing. And yeah, about, you know, as I'm sure you know, and just about any video poker player, you need those slot club points now to push you over 100%, because practically nothing at a high denomination is naturally over 100%. So you have to hit those big multiplier days or some day where they're running some kind of a promotion. So, yeah, between a naturally decent pay table and multiplier days, that's how most players, most advantage players do video poker now.
You know, through your life, maybe when you first came out to Vegas, maybe when you started the website, at any point, like what were your friends and family's response to your natural fascination with gambling and how deep you were getting into it?
My father was never very surprised by it because his grandfather was said to be a compulsive gambler, not so much in casinos, but he would do risky investments in oil and stuff like that. And I hear he did really well in Alaska, but then he moved, I think, to Washington State, and he just blew it all. But it was just said that he just had gambling in his blood, and I think that I inherited that. So, yeah, it's just something that everyone accepts about my personality, that if you're in my presence for more than 5 minutes, you're probably going to get challenged to a bet on something.
Do you you said you're not really much of a gambler anymore, but I still see you recently did like a Pai Gow tile video, stuff like that. Do you still find fascination with the games that are coming out?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm still right for my website, and I do freelance consulting. So I'm definitely still talking about gambling and writing about gambling and designing new games all the time. But it's just not really worth my time anymore to chase really thin advantage plays. I mean, you know, sometimes I'll just get my calculator out and realize, you know, I have an expected profit here of $10 an hour, and I could lose thousands. You know, it's not worth the aggravation or my time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I still like gambling, but it really doesn't do much for me anymore to just sit there in a casino if I don't have an advantage play. I just, to be honest, I feel kind of like a sucker if I'm not getting the best of it somehow.
Yeah, I think that's a part of it that aspiring APs don't understand, is just because you have a theoretical edge doesn't mean that the edge is necessarily going to pay off, right? And you pointed it out right there. Could profit $10 an hour, could lose thousands. Right?
Absolutely. And I like to think that I have a pretty cool head about losing, but nevertheless, you know, when I always bet no safety in the Super Bowl, and when there were 4 safeties in 6 Super Bowls, that was just kind of tough to take. So I'm not completely shall we say, invincible when it comes to getting mad over a really bad beat.
Other than safety or something like that, and you don't have to give me your worst beat, but do you have a memorable bad beat, maybe one you recall too often that you can share with us?
Well, I wouldn't call this a bad beat, but like I mentioned earlier, I used to play in a lot of tournaments here in Vegas, and what I would usually do is play just basically break even video poker, but I would run a lot of money through to get invited to these tournaments, mainly at the MGM casinos. And one time I got invited to a $300,000 baccarat tournament. Maybe it was a $500,000 one, but the top prize was $300,000. And I advanced through it, and I was doing really well. And basically, it all came down to the last hand, and I bet everything on the banker and the tie. I covered both of those. I just needed the banker or the tie to win. And it would have been a $300,000 payday. And, of course, the player hit. And granted, there was, a 45% chance of that happening. But
right.
That was certainly, the most money that was ever at stake on one turn of a card before. But for bad beats, everyone can tell stories about them. I still think that, there have just been some Super Bowls where I love the prop bets, where it just seemed like practically nothing went my way.
Right. I'm hoping to play in a baccarat tournament soon. MGM National Harbor, my local casino, offers them once a month, and I'm hoping to make it to one. What are some general what's some basic strategy you could throw my way?
Okay, it really depends on the structure of it. Do you know if it's going to be where they basically have a table of people and the top person advances?
I imagine that's what
it usually is. Another format is basically they let everyone play in a first round and the top so many scores advance, and it doesn't matter if you won your table or not. But this is something I could talk all day about. But the typical format where, let's say that you get placed at a table and they say, okay, the top one or the top two advance, and you basically just have to keep bubbling up. Yeah, you have to be aggressive in those tournaments. I mean, usually I will slow play it for about the first 80%, assuming that there's not much of an issue about bet maximums. So after 80%, I'll say, okay, it looks like I basically need to triple my money to win this thing. And then if you're behind, you have to wait for an opportunity to swing the first place player. So hopefully the guy in first place will make a big bet one way. And then in that situation, you just have to bet it all the other way.
Yeah.
You need to take it. These things are feast or famine. And if you're in a tournament with 300 people and only the top five are going to finish in the money, yeah, you need to take some chances. So it doesn't help you to finish 20th out of 500 if it pays nothing. You know, you be aggressive and be a contrarian when you're behind, and when you're ahead, you bet with your competition. So you're winning in step with your competition if you're ahead.
I do play in plenty of blackjack tournaments. Any quick notes there I should think about?
It's basically the same thing in terms of, biding your time early on to see who you need to go after and how much chips how many times you need to multiply your stack by, and then sometimes you just have to take that chance. And one thing I don't like to be in a position in a blackjack tournament is having to make a stupid play like doubling on 19 in the last hand. No, I like to be in first place going into that last hand, and let others try to chase me making stupid plays rather than me be the one having to make a stupid play to win. And sometimes if enough people advance at the table, you can just sit there and bet the minimum every hand in advance. I've seen that happen lots of times. Players just, they go crazy, and you can advance basically doing nothing. Every table is different. It depends on the rules, depends on how good the competition is. But always keep in mind, in a tournament, The enemy is not the dealer. It's the other players.
Yeah.
So you need to be playing them.
I remember my first tournament, we didn't even my table did, it was a top two from the table moved on. We didn't even finish the round because the other players already had busted out of their money because they were playing so aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it was not as easy. I have not made it to a final table yet, but fingers crossed. So the other day, I was at Horseshoe Baltimore, and I had some direct bet to play, and I was quickly trying to remember all of the message boards and other material that I had seen on your website talking about promotional chips and direct bet and any free play that you can use at a table. I know that, you know, it sort of depends on whether the bet stays or it gets pulled after it gets paid, stuff like that. But can we cover the philosophy behind how to use that play?
Yeah, sure. There's a whole thing on my website about it, but I'll do the best I can off the top of my head.
Sure. I guess usually they require you to play them on even money bets. What mm-hmm. games should I be going to look to play?
I usually just do it on blackjack, especially if you can use other free. I don't remember all the details, but yeah, usually I just use them in blackjack because of the low house advantage.
Okay. I brought my direct bet to the craps table, mm-hmm. And I asked him. I asked the pitbot first. Can I use these here? And he said, "Yep, pass line or don't pass. That's it." And I said, "Okay, if I use them on the pass line, can I use my own money for the odds then?" And he said that was fine. And so my thinking was, well, I'm pretty much free rolling my opportunity to get my money into perfect odds situation.
Mm-hmm.
How was that thinking? Was I on that way of thinking?
It depends what your reason for playing was. I mean, if you didn't have an advantage on that odds bet, but neither did you have a disadvantage.
Right.
So if you're happy to, shall we say, be a recreational player, yeah, why not? I mean, no house advantage is great. Nevertheless, if you had a professional gambler and said, oh, there's this play at the Horseshoe Baltimore with no house advantage, they would say, well, no house advantage. Why should I waste my time? So, yeah, it all depends on your reason for making that odds bet.
What game are you enjoying right now?
I really like PyGow Tiles. As you mentioned, I just did some videos on that, and I find that just an intellectually challenging game, and lots of times people recognize me at the table, so it's a good way to meet my fans. If you see a Caucasian playing PyGow Tiles, there's a good chance that either it's me or someone who learned from me. So, yeah, before I wrote about that game, it was only Asians played it. And no one else even understood the rules to the game, and the casinos were not eager to tell anyone the rules.
Yeah, I've just recently, in the past 6 months or so, have learned PyGow poker. So once I get my feel on that, I am interested in exploring PyGow Tiles. But like anybody else, I'm sure, including you, when you first learned about it, little intimidated on learning the rules.
Oh yeah, it was very difficult to even find out what the rules were, and I was living in Baltimore at the time, and I went from the casino to casino up and down the boardwalk asking, do you have anything in writing that shows the rules of this game? And I'm confusing another story, but it was really difficult. But finally, I think it was at the Trump Plaza where they had like a dealer's manual to the game, and they wouldn't let me borrow it, but they let me sit there and read it. So I got some paper and basically copied down the rules from this instructional manual, and that's how I started my analysis of the game. And then once I started to write a little bit about it on my site, people started to write to me and say, oh, I'm a dealer at the blah, blah, blah. Would you like our houseway? And I said, yes, please do. So people started mailing me other houseways, and that helped me to fine-tune my analysis of the game. But, yeah, every other place in Atlantic City, it was really frustrating because sometimes they would produce rules for the game, and they would say, I can't show this to you because it doesn't have the phone number of Gamblers Anonymous on it. And I would say, well, you know, the phone number is blah, blah, blah. Can you just write it on there? And some of them actually, like, paused and thought, can I do that? But then they all said no. So, but yeah, the guy at the Trump Plaza was really cool. Yeah, he just said, sure, spend as much time as you want with it.
If you had someone come into Vegas, you had a friend or so, you come into Vegas and they've never gambled before and they're like, Mike, I want to go out. I just want to have a good time. I want to gamble a little bit. Where would you take them? What games would you teach them?
I usually teach them blackjack and craps. Blackjack because it's a game that I like. It's very mathematical. It's strategic. It's a thinking game. And as long as I'm sitting there next to them, I can always tell them what to do. But I'll also introduce them to craps in case they are not the type of player that wants to study a strategy. And you know, some people just love craps, and that's their game. So I will at least introduce it to them to see if maybe they like that game better. So, and, you know, lots of times I'll play both games with them for half an hour, and then I'll say, okay, do you want to keep doing this one or do you want to switch back to the other one? And yeah, those are the two essential games that I think every beginner should learn.
Yeah. You know, we recently saw a few properties on the Strip put triple zero roulette on their floor.
Yeah.
I'm curious, you know, 6 to 5 really shook the blackjack world when it became almost the standard on the Strip. In the same way that double zero moved to triple zero, do you think that there's a next evolution in blackjack that's just going to shake the odds?
We're going to keep seeing the odds deteriorate in blackjack. It's going to get more and more expensive to play 3 to 2. Yeah, that's my prediction there. I don't see any other rule dramatically changing. I think that 6 to 5 is about as stingy as they're going to get for a while in live blackjack. I saw one game at the bar the other day, and it was even money on blackjack, and the player could not double or split. That was really egregious. but that was a bar top machine. Anyway, but yeah, about that triple zero roulette, I just shake my head. When 6 to 5 blackjack came out, I was like everyone else and just said, oh, these greedy casinos, you know, this is just like immoral to put that out there, taking advantage of these stupid players that, you know, don't know what's more, 3 divided by 2 or 6 divided by 5. But now I have more of just a market-based outlook. And if players are so stupid to play triple zero roulette when there's a double zero game right next to it at the same minimum, I don't know, just let Darwinism have at it, you know. What can you do?
Yeah, that's fair.
And, you know, the casinos are looking to make money too. And, you know, they're all singing the blues that profits are going down and that they need to tighten up on the rules.
What do you think, and not just currently what's happening, but over the long term, you say the profits are slimming. Is that because people are putting less action in because the rules and the odds keep on changing? Like, people are losing money faster and therefore not so keen or not so eager to go right back there? I mean, I don't know if that's currently what's happening, but do you think over the long term that that's actually going to be the effect? Or do you think that the average gambler is going to continue being the average gambler and the casino is going to continue making money off of them?
I think, you know, I haven't really thought about the reasons why that much, but I know a lot of people in the business here in Vegas, and they're always saying, Mike, you know, our revenue in craps is way down. Our revenue in blackjack is way down. What can we do? I think a lot of it is that gambling is legal practically everywhere else now. So a lot of players don't need to come here to gamble anymore. And if they do, maybe they're a little bit bored with gambling from playing at home, so they don't bet as high. I think it used to be that if you flew all the way from the East Coast to Vegas to play, you played hard because that was your opportunity, but now you can play anywhere. So I think that gambling is thought of more as now a recreational thing as opposed to people actually playing for the gambling. To make a long answer short, I think most players are playing better and they're betting less now.
I think AGA most recent report said 40 out of the 50 states in the union have at least one casino in it. So you're right. I mean, I'm curious as to, Vegas or Nevada in general has said that sports betting doesn't seem to have taken, or it doesn't seem like it'll take a hit too badly this football season. But I'm curious, 2 years from now when states like Maryland and Pennsylvania and Iowa and Indiana and other states in New York that are lining up for their next voting cycle, when they get this stuff legalized, are people even going to bother going out to Vegas to do that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I am supportive of the law of letting anyone have sports betting. I've always thought it was kind of unfair that Nevada had this monopoly on it. And I think that the casinos are going to have to adapt, that they're going to have to and they're already starting to do this, is make it not just a place to make a bet, but a place where it's actually fun to sit down and watch a game. And like you've seen, like the whole remodeling of the sports book at the Wynn, they've had to do that just to keep players in there and continue to be competitive.
Question again on Pie Gal Tiles. Now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know if I've ever seen Pie Gal. I think, no, that's not true. I think I saw it one time at Foxwoods, and I think that's mm-hmm. the only time I've ever seen people playing Pie Gal Tiles. Where are you playing this?
I usually play it at Harrah's, or I sometimes play at the Wynn. But usually I only play it if I have a friend in town and they want to play, or they want to gamble on anything, and I'll say, oh, well, how about learning tiles? But more and more casinos are getting rid of the game, so it's getting harder and harder to find.
To wrap up, I have one question, I have a game that I play called Bet Your Life on it. I'm going to give you a scenario. I'm going to give you two options. You're going to take either side, of course, completely hypothetical. You're not actually betting your life on it, but for the sake of nailing down a hard decision, the state of Utah, do you believe that they will have a legal casino or a legal weed dispensary open first in their state?
That's a good one. I would go with weed. And the reason being that the Mormons are just so deadly against gambling and alcohol and things that have a perception of being sinful. And granted, marijuana has that perception among some, but I could picture that getting through the door with medical marijuana. And I'm all in favor of that, by the way. I would be the first person to vote for it if I lived there. But I think it has great medicinal qualities to it. And I think that there's a lot of smart people in Utah that might be able to look past that lens of seeing everything in terms of its degree of sinfulness and recognize that it may help people who are suffering from pain or nausea. And for some people, it definitely is a healthier remedy than prescription drugs. So yeah, definitely the marijuana.
Okay. So one thing I wanted to ask you, something I've been meaning to ask you since I started following your site, something you're very adamant about that any real gambler that understands gambling is adamant about, is that systems don't work.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. What What's, and you know, you can choose any example for the sake of answering the question, but you know, you invite everybody in your site. If you have a system that wins or that actually works, let me know. And I think you put some ridiculous amount of money on there that you'll give them if it's true. What's one or two like ridiculous philosophies or approaches that you've seen submitted to you of like, hey, here's a system that'll beat the casino?
Well, of course, you see the martingale all the time, and they're usually all, if it's not the martingale, it's something similar to it, where you basically just keep pressing your bets after a loss. And people are often fooled into thinking these systems work, because most of the time when you sit down, they do work. But if you play it long enough, you're eventually going to have that devastating session where you just don't have the money on the table to make that one more bet, and you give back everything that you've won, and then some. So yeah, and you know, it's really kind of disturbing to me that I make all these YouTube instructional videos on how to play, and I see some other video that's by some quack about how to make millions from gambling with a bankroll of $100 playing craps, and that video will have 250,000 views, while mine has 2,500 views. But it just goes to show you that most people want some easy solution, that they want the easy way. But when it comes to making money gambling, there just is no easy way. You have to work at it if you want the odds in your favor.
In craps, the don't and the pass line and the don't pass line with full odds have a very slim difference to them, right? I think that the don't is what, 0.05% or something like that difference?
Yep.
If I play a continuous don't versus a continuous come bets, does either have is the risk of ruin different?
Well, the risk of ruin is going to be a little bit more on the pass side, just because that house advantage is a little bit more. But
yeah. But
this is something where I am not totally without emotion, that if you find it more fun to bet with the table and are willing to pay that extra 0.01% for that, then go ahead. I mean, gambling is supposed to be fun for recreational players. So if it's not fun for you, why play?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
If my host tells me, hey, I need 4 hours of $25 a roll or whatever for your room, and I'm trying to, I'm choosing between the don't and the pass. It feels like, and again, this emotionally, it feels like when I play a continuous don't that my money is stretching longer in time. Because when I play the pass, I so often, you know, get 3 points up there and then at the seven, you know, kills it or whatever. I'm just curious what the math says behind that versus just what I'm viewing emotionally.
I think that you're looking at it in a small sample set, that I think that if you played it both ways, you would find that the experience is kind of the same over a long period of play. You'll have great sessions, you'll have terrible sessions and everything in between. So, I mean, I'm not saying that anyone else should do this, but when I'm playing by myself or just a very quiet table, I'll play the don't just out of principle. But if I'm playing at a busy, rambunctious, happy table, then I will bet with the table, just because, number one, I don't want to get that guy who's getting the stink eye, and number two, it's just, to be honest, it's just more fun to play that way.
Yeah. I agree. That's exactly my philosophy as well. By myself, I play the don't. With friends or with a fun table, I roll with them. Michael, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Definitely a guest that I've been eyeing since I started this podcast, and a website that I've been following since I've taken gambling seriously. And so thank you so much for not only providing that information, but continuing to teach gamblers through your videos and other content that you produce.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, and let's do it again sometime.
After our interview was done, Mike mentioned that he enjoyed the interview and that he would be more than happy to come back on at some point. So we will see if we can make that happen down the road. Really nice to get these stories back on. I know I said that the last episode that we were going to get back into these, and it's fun to listen to people talk about their life of gambling, and not just where they started. Those are fun stories, but sort of where they are now, and what their approach is, and you really see this evolution. And I think for anybody who's a gambler who remembers their early days, remember sort of their when they were developing as a player, and then where they are now, I think you can resonate with a lot of it, and like, oh, I remember that time of my life. So those stories are always fun. Got a lot of cool interviews coming down the pipe. I ended up recording three yesterday. I have another one sometime this week, and then I got a couple more interviews that I'm scheduling with people. So super excited about the episodes coming down the road. We'll probably do a VV7 recap of some sort, but I don't know if I'll make that another normal episode again, or if I'll do one maybe with Tony or something and throw it on the Patreon. Patreon.com/thebetterlife is where you can support the show. And for those of you that aren't into the whole monthly commitment thing, I'm starting to write some blogs. I've got some blogs drafted up, so content is about to come to the website. But thebetterlife.us does have a donate button. It is solely there for anybody who is interested in supporting the show but isn't into that whole monthly commitment that Patreon is. So if that's your thing, that is available. I will hopefully on my flight to VV7, I'm hoping to go back and make posts for each episode, so that way the podcast better lives on thebetterlife.us. You can follow us on Twitter @thebetterlife. That's where I do most of my communication. Also on Instagram @thebetterlife. Whenever I'm out and about, to try to take pictures of the casino and what's going on there. And of course, it's a difficult because casinos aren't keen on that. But I do get some posts put up there. Thebetterlife.us/merch is where we have a few t-shirts available. Keep calm and throw dice. We also have a The Better Life t-shirt. And then, of course, our first shirt, which was one of those idiots who believes in analytics. You can use promo code YOELEVEN. That's YOELEVEN for 11% off of your order. We'll be right back next week, 7 days from now, with another interview, someone from the blackjack realm, someone who I believe is best known for blackjack. So stay tuned for that. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. I know there's so many options out there for entertainment. I mean, you go to the podcast section of iTunes, and there's new stuff popping up every day. So much great entertainment out there. It's truly humbling to know that you've taken the time to listen to me and my guests. Hope everybody enjoys whatever gambling endeavors they get into this week. I'm Timothy Lawson. Good night, and good luck.